like, I think the conversation has largely shifted around this Raptors team over the last couple of weeks, because although people, for the most part, didn't expect them to be in the basement of the East or the league, I don't know if they expected them to be as successful as they have been, despite the injuries that they've been facing. So have you taken an opportunity to kind of give a new prognosis, a new diagnosis to this team, what they can possibly do this year, their ceiling?
Yeah, I thought during the year, I thought I was, you know, on the more optimistic side. I thought they'd win around 50 games and be right there in the mix at the top of the East. I didn't think, my entire concern lied in, if Lowry or Siakam were to get hurt, where is the offensive floor? Do they have enough scoring? I was pretty confident they'd be a good defense, but I was a little worried what the offense would look like. And obviously they've played, what, I think 8 games now without Kyle Lowry, and the offense has just, you know, mostly kept humming along. And I think because it's so many small things leading to this, Pascal Siakam taking even more of a jump than we kind of penciled him in for, Fred VanVleet looking like a starting caliber point guard, OG Anunoby being back, Terrence Davis being the rare rookie who can kind of come in and contribute to winning right away. It's all of these little things that it's not like you can't point to one thing and be like, oh, that's what everyone missed. It's just every single piece is overshooting expectations a little bit, and then the sum of the whole is so much greater. So I've definitely changed, you know, certainly what I think their floor is. I don't know that I'm shifting their ceiling all that much. I just think the top five, top six in the East is still very tough. And it's as, you know, entering the year, I thought that mix was going to be really difficult, and it was going to come down to the playoffs with Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Miami, and who's healthy and who's kind of on all cylinders come April. I don't think that's changed, but I think, you know, I think the downside for this Raptors team just isn't there. They're going to be good more or less no matter what.
With Blake Murphy, Raptors reporter for The Athletic and the author of Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story. This is Lead Off, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blake, looking at the top five teams in the East right now, only Milwaukee has burped up a home game. They're 8-1. The Raps are 9-0 at home. The Heat are 8-0. The Celtics 7-0. The 76ers 9-0, all on home court. And my question out of this is, a lot of the deck chairs shuffled in the offseason. Players moved on. You know, Horford is a 76er from Boston. Kyrie is now in Brooklyn, having been a Celtic. Jimmy Butler goes from Philly to Miami. Guys moved on to different cities. I wondered if in the first quarter of the season it was going to take some of these upper echelon teams time to adjust. It appears that they've all hit their stride almost right out of the gate.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's going to make for a really fun playoff structure in the Eastern Conference, I think. I think you're going to see late in the year, normally when teams tend to ease up and start to focus on what they'll look like in the playoffs, there's going to be such a benefit to finishing first in the East because of where that drop-off is after six, maybe seven, depending on whether you like Brooklyn and where Kyrie is come April. But, you know, to have a top two seed in the East is going to give you an easier first-round matchup and home court in the second round, which, with how tight all those teams are and how well they all play at home, is really important. So this is a season that shapes up where, you know, for those five or six teams, the entire regular season is going to be really important. In terms of, you know, teams hitting the ground running, I think that's part of why you see Milwaukee at the top. There's some good continuity there other than losing Brogdon. Their defense, and that's the other thing, is that with most of these teams, they get it done with defense, and I wonder if defense is the thing that with continuity carries over a little bit better, and that's why you see the 76ers looking like the defensive ceiling team that we thought, Milwaukee looking like the defense that they looked like last year, and even the Raptors being a top five, top six defense right now. So those teams all look pretty comfortable right away. Obviously, they'll hit some walls. They're not all going to go 40-1 at home, especially once they start to play each other a little bit more here. But it certainly makes the East, you know, the conversations of East versus West and conference imbalance is mostly happening 7-14 in those conferences, not really 1-6.
Serge Ibaka now returning to the lineup for the Raptors. I thought he was excellent in his return, kind of helped the Raptors regain the lead they had from the first half when Utah was kind of climbing back into it. So he's back now. And when Lowry gets back, which players that are playing a lot that haven't been playing are going to lose out the most?
Yeah, Chris Boucher is the big one initially. Nick Nurse was kind of honest about it yesterday and said that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is more or less assured a spot. And there are opportunities where you can still get Boucher in the game. Once Lowry's back, they might be able to run some one starter and four bench player units instead of those two starter, three bench player units that they've mostly used. But Boucher is the one who, you know, he's just a little further down than Hollis Jefferson and Ibaka, and there will be opportunities for him still. Marc Gasol might get the odd night off. You know, you can play him at power forward alongside Ibaka in certain bench matchups, but he's probably the odd man out initially. How the guard position shakes down is a bigger question mark to me, because Terrence Davis has obviously played so well. Norman Powell has filled in fairly admirably as a starter. He's going to slide back to a bench role. And then, you know, whether Nick Nurse finds time for Powell and Davis, both around 15 minutes a game, or whether that's an either or every night, is going to be really interesting to see. And then Patrick McCaw could get dropped back in there sometime shortly after that, and we know how Nurse feels about McCaw. So I would be disappointed if they don't find a way to keep Terrence Davis in the rotation. I think he's more than earned it. I think he's been pretty consistent as far as rookie bench guys go. That's probably where the minutes crunch is coming, between him and Powell when Lowry's back. But if I'm Nurse, I'm trying to make sure Davis is still in the mix.
With Blake Murphy of The Athletic and the author of Chasing a Dream, The Carl English Story, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hypotheticals are always difficult, Blake, but I'm interested, 19 games in, what this would have looked like had Kyle and Serge in particular not gotten hurt. Because Nick Nurse was forced by necessity to learn about his bench. He was very hesitant to go to almost anybody in the first handful of games this season. What do you think this looks like had Kyle and Serge been able to stay on the court?
I think he would have had to go to it eventually. Maybe not in as much depth where those Davis, Hollis Jefferson, Boucher, the trio minutes really got a lot of run. But I was, you know, I kind of reached a point of frustration before the injuries where all this talk about how they didn't have depth, but no one had been tested. It's not like anyone had failed. They just hadn't had that opportunity yet. And I get that, you know, camp went the way it went, and we don't see all of that, and we don't see how things look in practice. But I thought Hollis Jefferson and Davis were due more opportunity anyway. I wonder if there's an element of the Raptors had that kind of tough and kind of compressed opening schedule, and then the West Coast trip, and then this huge stretch of 7 of 9 at home with a little more practice time. Maybe Nurse and the staff had that kind of window to start using the bench more anyway, as the schedule kind of eased up there. So I think he would have gotten to this eventually, maybe not as extreme minutes wise, but he had to get there at some point, because the idea of Lowry and VanVleet playing 40 minutes a night each, and Siakam playing 40 minutes a night, you know, as tough as the Eastern Conference is, and as much as those wins are valuable, that's not how you want to approach an 82-game season. So I think certainly you don't want guys to get hurt, but this is a big silver lining in that there's an element of trust there, and you don't really need to push Lowry, VanVleet, and Siakam well past 40 minutes, except in, you know, the toughest of matchups now.
Yeah, and that was becoming a regular thing for them. And the thing is that these guys want to be out there too, right? I don't think that this is a situation where it's like LeBron James, where he's like, yeah, load management, you want the best version of me down to the playoffs. I feel like a Siakam, we saw it a little bit yesterday, actually, when he got subbed off with like 4.5 minutes left. A Siakam, a Fred VanVleet, a Kyle, they're like, you want me to play for 39 minutes? Yeah, no problem. I'm only playing for 34. I think I could give a little bit more for you guys.
Yeah, that's the tough thing, especially with young guys like Siakam and VanVleet. And Lowry's obviously a gamer and will play as much as you want him to. But sometimes you have to help these guys out a little bit. And the tough thing is that the only, when it comes to managing loads or managing how much guys are doing with their body, the only thing we get to see is minutes played, right? We don't know for sure what's happening in practice, you know, how their bodies are feeling.
Yeah.
All we have to look at is minutes. So I'm sure that the team was looking at Lowry and Siakam and VanVleet and being like, no, we can manage this. You know, they'll set out some practices. All our internal stuff says they're not being overworked. But when you look at the minutes and that's all we have to look at, it does look a certain way. So, and I think there are examples too, where you saw, especially on that West Coast road trip and that Dallas game stands out in particular, where VanVleet and Siakam were just kind of gassed by the end. And if you can keep a guy down at 35, 36 minutes instead of 40 minutes, theoretically, you're getting a better version of him for those last 5-6 minutes. And I think that's an important consideration, too.
Blake, I know you're a thinker. Is it too early to start thinking about buying at the trade deadline, adjustments, putting this team over the hump to be able to really make a serious run. I don't think that they're not necessarily even primed to make a run. We've saw the effects Marc Gasol can have on some dangerous centers in the league. We've saw the game time mentality that Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, and Pascal Siakam can bring to the fold. But you always have that question with contenders. And we actually saw every team, except for Boston, I think, last year make a significant move at the trade deadline, Milwaukee, Toronto, and the 76ers. But is it too soon to think about things like that?
I don't think it's too soon to think about it theoretically. You know, the trade market in the NBA doesn't really open until December 15th when guys who were signed this offseason can now be traded. Obviously, you'll see things heat up closer to February. So we might not have an idea of which teams are selling and which names might be available for a little bit still. But if you're just thinking theoretically, yeah, I think you look at these Raptors and I think you say, hey, they've done extremely well finding value without high draft picks. So maybe they're willing to throw in one of their draft picks this year if that makes something happen. They have some guys who make sense as salary matchers if you're going to bring back kind of a mid-tier salary to beef up the bench. I think you're certainly looking, hey, what's going to happen with the point guard market? Is there someone who might be available that can slide into that third point guard spot just in case? Obviously, they've survived with Lowry out and Terrence Davis has improved in that primary ball handler role when he's been asked to, but you'd probably like another guy there just in case. So I think these are things they'll probably start thinking about and exploring. I think the idea of them selling off just for the sake of selling is probably, it probably wasn't there in the first place, in my opinion, because they thought they could be good this year, but I think that's more or less put the rest now. So they'll be keeping an eye on things. You know, the things to keep an eye on if you're a fan these next couple weeks or next month or so is which teams in those kind of jumbles toward the bottom of each playoff race, which of those teams starts to slide away and maybe becomes a seller. And that'll kind of give you an idea of what might be out there for the Raptors.
What, Blake, in your opinion, is the Raptors' biggest need? And it's a tough question. I mean, they've won 15 of 19 games. But what would be their biggest need at this point in your mind?
Yeah, I think I would be a little more comfortable if I were them if there were a third point guard on the roster just in case. It's just, it would be so hard to play in a playoff series if one of the point guards got hurt playing lineups where there's not a natural lead creator out there. Entering the season, I would have said probably another bench guy who can shoot threes. The fact that they are the best three-point shooting team in basketball has been a little surprising. And then I know that some people point to rebounding because they are one of the weaker rebounding teams in the league. The issue I have with rebounding is I'm not sure who out there you would acquire that's going to play over Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, and Pascal Siakam at the forward position. So I'd probably focus on getting another guy who can be a lead ball handler in a pinch, and if he can shoot, all the better.
And is Fred a fait accompli to re-sign here?
No, I don't think that's a for sure thing at all.
Has me scared, Blake. That was like
yeah, that was not what I wanted to hear.
It's just, he deserves to get paid is the thing. And obviously there's a lot of season left, right? So he could come down to earth or something like that. But you look ahead to the off season, there are only a handful of teams that figure to have significant cap space to where they'd be a threat to poach him. But some of those teams have tons of cap space. So if a team really likes VanVleet or strikes out somewhere else and kind of goes on tilt, I don't know, maybe a team like the New York Knicks who happen to make these crazy decisions on whims sometimes. There are a couple teams out there who could offer VanVleet something to where the Raptors might get paused. I think the Raptors would like to have him back. I think VanVleet would like to be back. But there is that threat of, you know, one of these bad teams with a ton of cap space just throws a Godfather offer at him. That's on the table.